I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. Good to have you with us. The Women's Health Protection Act, passed by the House of Representatives late last week, has little chance of becoming law. But there is significant legislative action winding its way through Congress, which addresses women's health and just might find its way into the law. The Black Maternal Health Momnibus Package. Now, Momnibus is big, really big. So, for a thorough explanation, I'm turning to Dr. Monica McLemore. She's an associate professor of family healthcare nursing at the University of California, San Francisco, an affiliated scientist with Advancing New Standards in Reproductive Health, and a member of the Bixby Center for Global Reproductive Health. Now, Monica, what exactly is the Momnibus?
The Momnibus was originally introduced by Representative Alma Adams, who is a Democrat from North Carolina, and Representative Lauren Underwood, who is a Democrat from Chicago. And it was originally a package of 9 bills that were put together to really address the Black maternal health crisis here in the United States. And unfortunately, it got released the Monday before the entire nation went on lockdown for COVID-19. So early on in the 117th Congress, Rep. Adams and Rep. Underwood, along with the 200 plus signatories with the Black Maternal Caucus within the House of Representatives, reintroduced the Momnibus. And instead of it being 9 bills, it's now 12. And it included things like paid family leave and perinatal mental health for veterans. And it included 3 new bills that had COVID-19 provisions for individuals. And basically what it is a set of bills and legislation that would really transform reproductive health across multiple spectrums. It has reform in it for payers, for pregnant people who provide pregnancy-related services. It has provisions to look at workforce. It has provisions to look at state maternal child health programs. It is one of the most comprehensive packages of bills for us to really provide comprehensive reproductive health care for pregnant, capable people in the United States. And we are so lucky that mid-September, it was included as part of the markup for the Build Back Better initiative. And that it looks like 2 of the bills, particularly one that was specific to maternal morbidity and mortality review committees, those committees that look at every maternal death, the Kira Johnson Act, named for Charles Johnson's wife, Kira, were earmarked. Those funds were allocated under the Build Back Better markup process in the Energy and Commerce Committee. So this is the first time it will allow us to really help to address the Black maternal health crisis in the United States. And it is a comprehensive set of legislation that we really, really want to be able to see be passed, including some low-hanging fruit like expanding Medicaid for the postpartum period out to a year instead of what it currently is under Medicaid, which is 60 days.
You've referenced a couple times the Black maternal health crisis. What exactly is that?
So in the United States, we've tried to bring awareness to the fact that Black moms are 3 to 4 times more likely to die from pregnancy-related issues, according to data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And it's estimated that of those between 700 and 900 deaths, that between 50 and 60% of them are preventable. The burden is really borne in Black communities and in some geographies in Native and Indigenous communities as well. And the Momnibus really seeks to address many of those upstream and preventable causes.
I want you to talk to me a little bit about nurses and particularly the ways that nursing education may or may not, at least particularly right now, be serving the very communities, the Black mama communities in the broadest sense, that the Momnibus bill is seeking to uplift.
Nursing has both this long history of service and this long history of Black and queer folk, you know, as participants in the workforce. And yet, unfortunately, at the higher echelons of power in nursing, you know, it remains, you know, unbearably white. And it does not reflect the communities that we serve. There have been multiple pathways to nursing education, but we have 1 national license as registered nurses. And so when I tell people I have 3 degrees from public institutions and I maintain my RN licensure, you know, I always say, yes, I'm a doctorally prepared nurse. But when I think about the entry to practice that I obtained, which was the Baccalaureate of Science in Nursing, I have worked with associate degree nurses. I have worked with community college nurses. I have worked with master's nurses. When you further complicate this around pregnant capable people, I would be remiss if I didn't say anything about the midwives and the discrediting of the grand midwives, particularly those of which who were mostly Black. When you think about nurse midwifery and professional midwifery, it's no different. There are multiple pathways to become midwives. And one of the things that the Momnibus does address is this idea that we want to reinvest in the Black midwifery workforce, because we know that they, midwives and doulas, in partnership with communities and patients, get superior outcomes when we're talking about pregnant capable people. That said, we have not been able to structurally diversify the nursing workforce. And this was further highlighted and borne out by the recent Future of Nursing report, and that there are direct instructions for schools of nursing, for professional organizations in nursing, for the National Institutes of Nursing Research, which is under the National Institutes of Health, to diversify our workforce as a potential path to improve health outcomes. So the story of nursing is both one of needing a reckoning, but also one of opportunity, one of excitement, and one of, if we can really get beyond our shameful history, then I think we actually have a prime opportunity to do some really good work. If we wanted to be able to diversify, midwifery could easily be built now. There are no midwifery programs at any historic Black college or university. If we wanted to rapidly diversify the midwifery workforce, we would build paths to historically Black colleges and universities who already have health sciences on their campus.
Okay, Monica, my next question is, how does abortion and the access to safely terminate pregnancies fit into this broader understanding of maternal health care?
We know from national polling that Americans have been supportive of abortion rights, and are supportive of people being able to have timely and safe and community-based abortion care. For the first time ever, in a Supreme Court case that potentially could overturn Roe versus Wade and has implications for Casey and Obergefell, the gay marriage decision, there is a Black maternal health amicus brief that was led by the National Birth Equity Collaborative and our good friend and colleague, Dr. Joya Currier-Perry, and her team was really happy to sign on to this, to make the argument that's grounded in reproductive justice, that the state's rights, and this is specific to the case of Mississippi, does not trump human rights or bodily autonomy of individuals. And so this issue around abortion, this issue around fetal rights, this issue around viability is being couched incorrectly, because the state's interest in termination of pregnancy does not trump the human right to bodily autonomy in life and in death that we all currently have as a human right. No one can go dig up your corpse when you're dead and take your organs without your consent, right? So if we have bodily autonomy in life and death, and these are human rights that we are afforded, then the state's right in Mississippi does not trump that human right. When we look at the SB 8 in Texas, virtually banning abortion at 6 weeks and deputizing citizens and private individuals to be able to bring lawsuits against people who aid and abet people seeking essential abortion care and exercising their right to bodily autonomy, we are looking at a step backwards in terms of how we think about operationalizing reproductive justice and human rights in the United States. And I was very glad to see, corporate individuals, I was very glad to see people step up to want to defend the right of individuals to access abortion care in the state of Texas, in the state of Mississippi. We also saw a similar law to the state in Texas be introduced in Florida last week. We need to be very clear with people that states' rights do not trump human rights, and that the human right to bodily autonomy is consistent with reproductive justice. And that is the way that we will end the Black maternal health crisis in the United States, is to respect the bodily autonomy and to trust Black women, Black birthing people, and other pregnant capable individuals.
Can you expand for me just a little bit the sort of phrase women's health, or our assumption that reproductive health is always about women, where women is pretty narrowly defined as cisgendered folks? What happens when we expand that definition?
What we are trying to achieve is, you know, gender inclusive language to recognize that not all people who birth or have capacity to do so identify as women, that not all people who have capacity to birth are actually ever going to birth, and that we really are trying to get at a better taxonomy to talk about a variety of issues that impact people regardless of what their reproductive capacity is. And that's why reproductive justice is so important, because it really allows us to have that precision that we're seeking in our language. Women's health is a component, but not comprehensive, of reproductive health and reproductive well-being. And so we don't want to be exclusionary at all. We want to make sure that, you know, LGBTQIA folks and non-binary folks and people who don't necessarily even believe in gender understand that there are health services that we all should expect and have a right to under human rights. And so one of the things that I think is really, really important that we think about is the language that we use when we're talking about, you know, services across the reproductive spectrum, and to have some precision in that language.
Dr. Monica McLemore is the Associate Professor of Family Healthcare Nursing at the University of California, San Francisco. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, y'all, we wanted to hear from you on this as well. What has been your experience with reproductive health care? Have you felt seen and heard by your healthcare providers?
Hi, this is Emily from Alexandria, Virginia. I have been on some form of birth control, with the exception of two pregnancies, for about 20 years. I am thoroughly pro-choice, but my husband is not. He is a devout Catholic. It's something I try and respect. We just agree to disagree at which point in a pregnancy life begins.
Hi, this is Ifa Kola-Lewis, and I'm calling from Las Vegas, Nevada. About 15 years ago, my then wife was pregnant, and the pregnancy threatened to compromise her health, that it might have killed her. And so I had to go with her, and she actually had to have a medical abortion performed. It was a very solemn moment for us. At the same time, I'm glad that we did have the resources to be able to keep her alive, and she's still alive today.
Hi, this is Jasmine from San Diego. It took me 2 years and three OBGYNs to get an IUD, the first to refuse because I, quote, had not used my uterus yet. I was 25 and can't imagine having a child at that time in my life. Instead of an IUD, I was prescribed multiple types of birth control that made me very ill. I finally found a good OB who listened and immediately scheduled my IUD. And I'm now 31 and I still don't have any kids, so I'm very thankful.
I'm June from Corning, New York, and I want to say that Planned Parenthood was very important to me when I was in college. It gave me safe, secure exams and provide birth control responsibly.
I've been able to take my reproductive health care for granted. Growing up with rights, I used Planned Parenthood for birth control, yearly exams, and a termination of an unwanted pregnancy when I was 18, as well as the morning after pill in my 40s. I've used them before having health insurance and after having private insurance. I had private insurance before having my child and now into menopause. I've weaved Planned Parenthood in and out of my care when I wanted privacy. I can't imagine not being able to make choices about what I want to do with my body based on my current situation in life. I've had so much freedom to choose, and I worry for the future fertile aged woman who won't have the freedoms I did. It's wrong.
Thank you so much for sharing your stories with us. And you can continue telling us about your experiences with reproductive health care at 877-869-8253. Or send us a voice memo at takeawaycallers@gmail.com. We always love to hear from you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.